Welcome to the Musings on Sports podcast for May 17th, 2022. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host Bob Bupka, who is back in familiar settings this week, on the road again, along with our executive producer Janice Self in the media center on site at the 104th PGA Championship at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa. My dear friend, you've battled through some major health issues, so it must feel extra, extra sweet to be able to return to a major golf championship.
Well, you're right on the money there, Kelly. You know, when you do something for a long time, you have a tendency, even though it's not deliberate, you kind of take things for granted. I took being in the media room, oh, well, no big deal. Well, when I couldn't be in that media room dealing with my health issues, I realized that, wow, what a privilege to be in that media room and to be out here. And congratulations to the PGA of America. They have done a magnificent job in creating this massive interview media room complex. Everything about this championship indicates that we're going to have a good one. Even the weather, which has been notorious here in Tulsa, is predicted. I couldn't believe it when they said Saturday the temperature may not reach 70 degrees. I mean, in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Well, of course, it is May. Last time we were here, it was August, so that does make a difference.
Well, and I want to get to that in a second, the difference in the temperature. But, I know you've been pressing the flesh. You've been seeing some old friends. You even had a certain fellow by the name of Tiger Woods pop by to say hello to you. That must have felt pretty cool.
Well, it was pretty amazing. Tiger was in for his mass interview, and as you could tell, it was well attended. Just about everybody in the media was at the press area for Tiger's interview. And when he got finished, and my thanks to his manager, for assisting me in getting this, but Mark Steinberg made it a point to direct Tiger over to where I was. And Tiger, opened up with, "Hey, Bobby, good to see you." And Tiger, see you. And, Tiger, I want to remind you, I think the only one that's been at all 15 of your major championships. He says, "I know that, Bob, and I appreciate you being here this week." And then the executive producer, Janice Self, who's had a wonderful relationship with Tiger over the years. They walked away. Tiger put his arm around her, and they had a nice little conversation. So when the world's greatest golfer living has an opportunity to stop by and say hello to you, boy, it makes feeling better a lot better.
No, I bet it does. And maybe you two are the lucky charms for Mr. Woods this week. Speaking of him, and we often do speak of Tiger Woods, I know you and I are looking forward to having Bob Herrig of Sports Illustrated and Morning Read as our guest today. Bob has written a fantastic new book entitled Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. And it really has been fascinating, as you well know, Bob, and the book is doing well. Bob's a terrific writer covering, I guess you could have to say, the most celebrated rivalry in golf history.
Well, there's little doubt about that. And I compliment Bob after our interview. I said, thank you for sharing. He really went deep in allowing the listeners of Musings to, find out some stuff that they probably not aware of. I mean, it was quite a rivalry for the longest time. I mean, and much to Phil's credit, during those peak years, and we touch upon it when we're speaking to Mr. Herrick, it was not easy on Phil because Tiger basically dominated, even though Phil won 45 times on the PGA Tour. Phil always had Tiger looking over his shoulder, and Phil wasn't the only one. I mean, the careers of Ernie Els, Sergio Garcia, all had to deal with the magnificent play of Tiger Woods. And I'm gonna give you listeners a little tip right now. Tiger looked great today. Matter of fact, when he shook my hand, he almost broke it. I mean, his strength has come back, and he looks fit. And don't be surprised if come Sunday we see his name somewhere near the top of this leaderboard.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Last time the PGA Championship was played there at Southern Hills, he won it. And he has flat out said that he's getting stronger. His, you know, it's going to be a stamina issue with him. Those are some pretty up and down hills, no different in a lot of ways than Augusta National. But he sounds like he believes he's stronger than he was just a month ago at the Masters. 2007, the PGA Championship indeed was played at Southern Hills. It was played in August, Bob. I have a lasting memory from that year when Tiger won. What do you recall from that August week in Tulsa in 2007?
Well, two things that I distinctly remember. It was blazing hot. I mean, it was well over 100 degrees, and I remember being out there, and I'm saying, good golly, how do these guys continue to play in this heat? And then the other lasting memory, and this is going to surprise a lot of our listeners, the clubhouse here at Southern Hills is just magnificent. And at the time, they had a fantastic chef, and his specialty, believe it or not, was peach, P-E-A-C-H, soup. It was served cold, and when it's 100 degrees outside, I can remember distinctly making my way to that dining room just so I could have some of that peach soup.
It was the perfect elixir for, there's no question. It was just oppressive heat. I was fortunate enough to serve as the moderator for press conferences at that time for those conferences that were seen on Golf Channel. And it was fantastic. Obviously, Tiger became the first player in many, many years to successfully defend his title at the PGA Championship. So a lot of memories of that. But for me, the one that really stands out was after the first round, or after about midway through the first round, John Daly had gone out somehow, Bob, and shot 67. And it was as improbable a round of golf, not because John can't do it, because he clearly has the skill level, but because John had made the decision to spend the first 3 days of that week pretty much at a nearby Indian casino, just playing slots and hanging out and drinking with some buddies. And he didn't register until the morning of his first round. I don't remember if he had played Southern Hills prior, but he sure as heck didn't play it in the three practice rounds leading in to the championship itself. He goes out, of course, and shoots 67, so pretty much sight unseen. That's the level of talent that John Daly had at that time, and had for many years for that matter. And when John came in for the interview, I got to tell you what, he flat out stunk. I mean, he stunk to high heaven. I think it was this combination of the booze, of the Pall Malls. He talked about this. He was smoking cigarettes out on the golf course, and just the heat in general. And for the next 30 minutes, it was an absolute joyride. It was a rollicking, fun ride of the life of John Daly and him answering questions and basically saying, I have no idea how I shot this round. I just did. And he pretty much, he intimated that he kind of knew he wouldn't be around for long. He ended up tied for 32nd. But, man, for those 30 minutes, you couldn't help but love being in the world of John Daly. I'm not sure I wanted to be in the world of John Daly outside of that controlled media environment afterwards. But those 30 minutes have continued to stay with me for a long time.
Well, let me verify that story about the casino, because it was the same casino I was using to play blackjack while John Daly was a mere 15 feet away playing slot machines. And I said, John, you got a major championship coming up. He said, don't worry, Bob. That championship will take care of itself. So the one, the only, John Daly.
We talk about a unique person. He has his own approach. Well, hey, Bob, let's get to it. PGA Championships, this will be the fifth time that Southern Hills has hosted the PGA Championship, the most of any golf course. Interesting little statistic that if history holds true, then whoever's leading after 36 holes this coming Friday is going to win and hoist the Wanamaker Trophy. Every major championship, the seven that have been played at Southern Hills prior to this week, whoever has led midway through the championship has gone on to win it. So, my friend, who do you like for the 104th PGA Championship?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with the hot horse because he's completely under the radar. Nobody in the media center is making a big deal whatsoever over Scottie Scheffler. And Scheffler has vaulted to number one in the world. He's just won the Masters. He's the only one that can win the Grand Slam, winning all four majors this year. He played relatively well last week back in Dallas at the Byron Nelson. I really fancy Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. Everything indicates that he's going to play extremely well. He had a practice round, I believe, last week at Southern Hills, played it well. I like him. I like Jordan Spieth. I think Jordan Spieth is rounding into excellent form. Should he win? He claims the title as having won all of the major golf championships. The PGA Championship is the only one he doesn't have. If he keeps those emotions intact and doesn't miss those two-foot gimmies on a particular hole, and just continues to swing really well. His swing is excellent. His attitude is really good. Jordan Spieth should play well. What a pairing the first 2 days. Tiger, Rory McIlroy, who I also think will play well, and Jordan. What a great great three players to over the first 2 days to be playing together.
Yeah, if you never watched any other grouping besides that threesome, you certainly won't be cheated.
Yeah, no question about it. Here's hoping for a great week at the PGA Championship. And we're going to visit shortly with Bob Herrig, our buddy, out with his new book about Tiger and Phil. We will do that as soon as we hear from our good friends at Titleist.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elvin here along with Bob Bupka, who's on site at the 104th PGA Championship at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa, and who is also with our special guest, Bob Herrig, author of the new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. Bob Herrig, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Sports.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to do this. Thanks, guys.
You know, Bob, or Kelly, I should say, I've known Bob a long time, and the one thing I always admired was the respect players paid to Bob Herrig. When he asked a question, they'd take a little time. They just wouldn't give a flippant remark. But we're here to celebrate this book about Tiger and Phil. And I have to begin, Mr. Herrig, by asking you the actual genesis of this book. What came into your head, or what had you leaning in the direction of writing a book that had never been written about the rivalry of Tiger and Phil?
Well, after Tiger won the Masters in 2019, it occurred to me that, you know, that's a pretty good crowning achievement. And if nothing ever happens again, you know, what a run it's been. And yet I know that a lot's been done on Tiger and a lot hadn't been done on Phil. And it started getting me to think that the intersection of their careers was worth exploring, because I thought we were coming to the end of it. I mean, you know, based on their age, certainly, it suggested that if there was going to be more glory, it wasn't going to be very often. And so I kind of went down this path of researching, you know, just how much they came in contact with each other. And I, you know, just from my own experience, I remembered some of the dust-ups, some of the tension, the Ryder Cup of 04, Doral 05 when they had a great duel. The fact that Phil sort of finally figured out how to win majors. And it got me to thinking that, hey, look, people love rivalry stories. They're great in sports. You know, is it Bird Magic? Probably not. But Bird and Magic didn't go head-to-head that often either. You know, they're on opposite coasts, played in different conferences. But yet when they did come together, people watched. And people were either a Phil guy or a Tiger guy. I just think all those dynamics sort of made for a story that I tried to tell. And, you know, as I got into it, I learned even more and more just how much their careers, despite how different they were, intertwined.
You know what impressed me about the book, Mr. Herrick, is it really gives some insight into how good Phil was. And I often said, boy, if Tiger wasn't on the scene, I mean, Phil would be the greatest ever. Instead, you know, never was number one player in the world, never was number one money earner, not because there was anything wrong with his golf game. Mm-hmm. It's just that Tiger was there. And I think your book is going to enlighten a lot of people onto the extreme talent that Phil Mickelson possesses to play the sport of golf.
It's funny, when I told Phil about the book, and, you know, of course, these guys are never going to be happy about somebody writing a book, even though we write hundreds of thousands of words about that appear around the world on the internet, but they're worried about a book. But nonetheless, you know, I tried to impress upon him, my goal is to highlight how good you have been. That in some ways your incredible career has been overshadowed because of what Tiger's done. Phil won 36 of his 45 PGA Tour events in the Tiger era. Think about that. 36 times he won at the same time that Tiger was competing. There wasn't a lot of real estate left with Tiger, and yet Phil won 36 times, which is more than anybody on tour today other than Tiger. So you're right. Phil never got those top prizes. He never had the low scoring average. He never was number one in the world, which is really pretty remarkable when you think about it. As consistently good as he was in the top 25 for 15 years. He's in the top 50 for 25 years. Never fell out of the top 50 really until two or three years ago. And then he got back in when he won the PGA last year. So, and of course, he had an even more crowning achievement than Tiger did. As great as Tiger's Masters win was, you could certainly argue that Phil winning the PGA at age 50 to win his sixth major was every bit or more impressive than what Tiger did in 19 coming back from all he came back from.
Bob Herrick, author of Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry, joining us on Musings on Sports. Bob, you talked about Magic and Bird and some of the other great rivalries down through the years, and with those rivalries naturally come great egos. And I'm wondering if you could talk for a little bit about the egos and the relationships from those egos between Tiger and Phil, how they perhaps may be different today than they were when they started, and how that relationship has evolved over the years.
Right. I mean, certainly early on, there was a wall, probably created more by Tiger, because Tiger wasn't going to let anybody get close. You know, he just was the sort of person that kept everybody at arm's length. You recall his best friends in golf were players like Mark O'Meara, John Cook, who were far older than him. He was not hanging around with Phil. He wasn't hanging around with Ernie Els or Vijay or Retief Goosen or, you know, guys of his age group, because he felt like the competitor he was, he needed to keep them away. Phil was more gregarious and obviously outgoing. He took the younger guys under his wing as he got older. He enjoyed all that stuff. Totally different personality. You know, Tiger, the stoic, you know, blinders on, you know, ruthless champion. Phil, the happy-go-lucky people's champion. You know, remember when Tiger won the U.S. Open at Bethpage in 2002, Phil was the more revered guy that week. You know, Phil finished second there, And he was the people's champion, if you recall. Everybody was cheering for Phil, the guy who lit up New York. And, I think that bothered Tiger a little bit. He's like, hey, I'm kicking this guy's butt all the time. That was Tiger's eighth major, and Phil had yet to win one. And yet Phil maybe was more popular. And I think it just sort of showed the differences between them. It took a while for it to thaw. They had to get older, more mature. They needed more perspective. Tiger finally, I think, after all of his back woes, when he was trying to come back to the game, 2018, he had softened, and his respect for Phil had grown to the point where he actually gave him credit for reaching out to him when he had his chipping woes. Phil had offered to help him, which that would have never happened 3 or 4 years before. No chance that could have happened. There's a stubbornness, I think, that has to be to be so great. There probably has to be a selfishness. Can you imagine back in the day, Tiger probably would have loved to have picked Phil's brain about chipping because Phil was so good at it. He had such a great imagination. Phil might have wanted to pick Tiger's brain about putting or maybe about iron play. Tiger still to this day is an elite iron player. So those things couldn't happen back then. Maybe more likely to have happened here in later years. Although, at this point in time, it's really hard to say where their relationship is given the state of current events.
Speaking of the state of current events, you are at Southern Hills along with Mr. Bupka and a lot of media, and Phil Mickelson is not there to defend his PGA Championship, which was an unbelievable achievement as the oldest major winner a year ago at Kiawah Island. Bob, in your opinion only, why isn't Phil there? And when do you foresee him actually making his next appearance?
I think ultimately it comes down to he wasn't ready to face all of this. Because I think we have to take them at their word that he was welcome to come play. So if there was no wall, like no PGA Tour suspension, no effort by the PGA of America to keep him from playing, then it came down to his call and why he decided not to. My guess has to be that he doesn't want to deal with all of this. Maybe he doesn't want to face his peers. There's been considerable backlash. Obviously, he lost a lot of sponsors. There's been a lot of other players critical of him. Some of them feel like he's getting his comeuppance for, he's been a brash, kind of arrogant, cocky guy for a long time. And maybe some of them see this, are reveling in some of this. Maybe he doesn't want to be around that. Certainly, you'd have thought he could have withstood a 30-hour news conference from a bunch of golf writers. I mean, he would have got grilled with some tough questions. He's been around this many, many times. He's the master of deflecting. Could have easily done that. So, from that standpoint, I'm a little surprised. Maybe it's because he's all in with the LIV Golf Invitational Series and sees this as a way to generate some more publicity for them, which would be even greater if that becomes his first event back. Imagine if he is there outside of London next month with which I actually think is starting to become more of a reality.
Bob Herrick joining us, and let me throw a little bit of a curveball at you, but you've been a pretty good hitter for years. You get a phone call tonight from the Phil Mickelson people, and they say, Mr. Herrick, we want you to take over a PR for Phil Mickelson. What's the first or second thing you might have Phil do?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, I think he needs to be patient. If he's not ready to come back, it doesn't make any sense. But when he is, I think he needs to, he needs to air it all out. Just be honest, I would be a little bit more softer around the edges when it comes to the PGA Tour. It is where he's made his legacy 30 years, his comments about the tour were harsh. And while, he might have actually had some constructive criticism, I don't think we can all sit here and say that the PGA Tour is doing everything right by the players. There's grumbling all the time out here about the PGA Tour. Where's this going? Where's that money going? Why aren't they doing this? Players do that all the time. You know, so Phil might have had some legitimate gripes that completely got swallowed up in this whole thing with, you know, consorting with another tour and, you know, the PGA Tour's, what did he call it? He talked about them being greedy. You know, well, you know, there was probably a better way to say that, certainly in public. And I just think he probably needs to fall on his sword a little bit. But I'm not sure he can get all the way back in the graces of everyone, good graces, if he doesn't turn his back on the LIV Golf people. That's just become so contentious. The tour isn't going to want him playing for them. So if he goes over there and plays even once or twice, and I say over there, you know, they have 8 events scheduled this year. 5 of them are in the U.S. He wouldn't even really be going over there except for a couple of them. You know, I'm not sure he can get completely back, but I think there is a way for him to sell it. You know, there is a way to sell it. I'm not saying I condone it, but, you know, look, there's all kinds of conflicts in golf. You know, the U.S. has a lot of companies that do business in Saudi Arabia. Now, maybe we should be calling them out. I don't know. But if there is that factor, the tour has events in China. Actually sponsors a developmental tour. China has a bad human rights record. Mexico has killed 3 journalists this year. There's 2 tournaments in Mexico. I'm not using that to say that justifies this. I'm just saying that we don't talk about those. And yet we're talking about this. And at what point, where does that end? Where do you draw the line? And so I think Phil could point some of that out if he wanted to. It's not going to sway a lot of people, you know. You could certainly make the argument, well, yeah, those things are bad too. Why is a tour playing in China? Okay, that's fair. But, you know, we in the media don't point that out very often. We're very heavy on the Saudi thing, which is understandable. But like I said, two events a year in Mexico, and obviously, you know, they're a neighbor of ours, they're allies of ours, but there's a lot of bad stuff that happens there too. You know, so I just find the thing to be very, very complicated. It's not as clear cut as some people are trying to make it out to be. And I guess there's a part of me that, you know, having appreciated Phil for all these years, I hope there's a way back.
One last thing from me, and then I'm going to give it back to Kelly Elbin to conclude our time with Bob Herrick. I might alert you to the fact there are a lot of people waiting to talk to Bob Herrick here. So we can't be too greedy, Mr. Elbin. But are you surprised at all that Phil didn't get more vocal support from other players on the tour? It seems like quickly he ended up on an island by himself.
It's a great point, I think. He's the one that's taken the heavy hit when there were several players in line to go do this. Let's be honest. They had more than just Phil ready to jump, sign contracts, go play in this league, get a lot of money. And it's sort of like, you know, like if 10 of us were going to go to the edge of a cliff and jump 100 feet off into the water and we're all afraid to do it. And we say, well, let's all go do it at the same time. All right, well, if we let one of them go do it and then it doesn't look too good, like that looks dangerous, the rest of us might back off. Well, that's exactly what happened. Phil's the only one who jumped. He's the only one who went over the edge. The rest of them all retreated and nobody else is catching any grief for it. Now, we're seeing a little bit when some of these names have come out, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, some other names, Martin Keimer, they were all reported to have sought releases to play. You know, they're experiencing a little bit of blowback, but nothing to the extent that Phil's gotten. And, you know, in a way, he's sort of been left out there. You're right.
Bob Herrick, I want you to be able to tell our listeners where they can purchase your new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. But before we close this out, I'm wondering if you could maybe give a little bit of comparison with this rivalry to prior ones among elite golfers? How do you compare Phil and Tiger to, say, Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson? How do you compare the two to, say, Jack and Arnold? Are they apples to apples comparisons?
No, I don't think they are. I mean, Jack and Arnold were 10 years apart in age. And while that was viewed as a great rivalry, it was really probably more of a rivalry that started out because Jack invaded Arnie's turf and then sort of kind of kept going into business. Arnold won his last major championship in 1964. You know, Jack was winning majors 22 years later. You know, so the competitive rivalry actually ended in the early 70s, and Jack dominated the 70s. He missed one cut in a major in the 70s. In 40 majors, he missed one cut. You know, he had a remarkable run during that time when Arnold was basically past his prime. You know, so, but yet we consider them rivals. I would look at Hogan and Snead more as rivals. Now, they were the same age. They were, you know, very competitive at the same time. They won a like number of majors, 9-7, Hogan to Snead. You know, they had a Masters playoff one year. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I couldn't tell you the year that was. Might have been 1951, sure. I think. Or maybe it was 54. And in any case, you know, just like Tiger and Phil and Jack and Arnie, well, Hogan and Snead traded green jackets in the 50s too. So that one is a great rivalry because they kind of came up around the same time. You know, the Tiger-Phil one's a bit more nuanced. I mean, the word fascinating was used. I mean, we thought about the word complicated. I think complicated also fits. It is a complicated rivalry, you know, because it's not so clear-cut. But yet there were the moments, you know. Stevie Williams called out Phil one time, you know, got caught, you know, saying something bad about him, and Tiger had to kind of put out that fire. And then there was another time when Phil made fun of Tiger's equipment, and it was actually meant to be a backhanded compliment, but it caused all kinds of controversy because of Nike. And, you know, the Ryder Cup, obviously, when they were paired together, and that did not work out very well. And some of their duels, you know, again, Tiger won way more tournaments than majors, but there's three great examples of Phil denying Tiger: 06 Masters, the 10 Masters, and the 13 British Open at Muirfield, where Tiger, remember, that time was, you know, hadn't won much since he came back from the scandal. He had won tournaments but no majors. He was only two back. He looked like he's finally going to get it done, and Phil comes from five back to beat everybody. You know, that one killed Tiger, and Tiger didn't want to give up any praise to Phil after that. You know, he was so mad at himself afterward that, you know, giving Phil any credit wasn't in his arsenal. So, in terms of other golf rivalries, I mean, I think it's right up there. You know, Norman and Faldo was one too, I think, for a while. The reason to me Tiger and Phil, at least in our time, stands out is because they were just up there for such a long period. Other guys came along like Vijay and Padraig Harrington and Retief Goosen and Ernie Els. You know, O'Meara won a couple majors early on. You know, other guys were there, but they never sustained it like those two guys.
It's a terrific new book. Bob Herrick, tell our listeners where they can get purchase copies of Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry.
Easiest way is to go order it on Amazon. If you're an Amazon member, they give you free shipping. It'll be at your house probably tomorrow if you order it today. But it's in a lot of bookstores, right, too. Barnes & Noble is the big one that it's in. And, you know, I've had people actually text me photos of them with the book in a bookstore, which is kind of cool to see. Even somebody from Canada. So so anyway, yeah, it's out there. And I appreciate you letting me share it with everyone.
Well, thank you. Keep reading him in Sports Illustrated and Morning Read. And absolutely purchase the new book. Bob Herrick, thanks so much. And best of luck this week at the PGA Championship and moving forward.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover. The smarter Tour Ball.
Well, Bob, I really enjoyed our talk with Bob Herrig. Can't wait to dive into the book. Bob's a talented writer, as we've talked about, and I think he really captured the essence of that rivalry between two very different personalities.
Yeah, and Bob's really proud of what he was able to put down in that book, and I agree with you. It's going to make for certainly a good read. And by the way, we got a pretty good writer coming up next week as our guest.
Yeah, we really do. Obviously, want to thank Bob Herrig for his time. The great sports writer, John Feinstein, who has written on pretty much everything sports related, golf, football, baseball, basketball, will be joining us next week. And we encourage you to listen to Musings on Sports wherever you enjoy your podcast. For Mr. Herrig this week and for John Feinstein next week, selfishly, please check out my Monday Musings on my Facebook page. That's Kelly Elbin. And for Bob Bubka, live and in person at the PGA Championship at Southern Hills, this is Kelly Elbin signing off, and thank you for joining us on Musings on Sports.